So good morning, everyone. I'm get the session underway. Purpose of the session is to consider what works and what doesn't work in running effective meetings. And our presenter is Stephen Fleming. Stephen has done this numerous times for us, very generous with his time. Stephen's a really exemplary example of the dedication that some of our municipal officers have to training the newly elected officials. Stephen is the city clerk from the city of Kelowna, and he's a part-time instructor in local government at Capilano University. He's worked in local government for the past 18 years, first at the District of North Vancouver, before moving to Kelowna in 2003. His professional interests include civic governance and acting as a mentor to younger local government professionals. So please join me in welcoming Stephen Fleming.
Thank you. Given that it's your first session of the day and fairly early still, we'll keep this quite informal. If you have questions, please feel free to interrupt while I'm speaking. You don't need to wait to the end. So what we'll be talking about today is a little bit of council authority, some meeting rules and etiquette, and some thoughts on public participation. All these topics will be touched on by other speakers over the next 2 days, and some will offer differing opinions. Making meetings work in particular is much more of an art than a science, and so there are different ways to do things and still be doing it effectively. You'll see at my some of my concluding remarks, it really matters is you need to find a style and a way that works for you and your council or board. So we'll start off with some just basic roles and responsibilities of council. One of the things that you'll hear a lot of is you'll hear people talking to mayor and council. Strictly speaking, council includes both the mayor and the councillors, and you're talking to mayor and councillors. Council is a collective body made up of the mayor and however many councillors happen to be sitting around your council table. Council is also a continuing body. And what that means is you've inherited all the decisions of the councils that came prior to yours. Unlike the province or the federal government, bylaws don't die on the floor. You'll give considerations to bylaws that the previous council may have given first reading to or actually held a public hearing on, but you're asked to adopt them. So there's that continuation. The budget that you'll consider was largely put together under the direction of the previous council. But because council is a continuing body, the business continues without having to start fresh again, as it does in the provincial and federal spheres. The other thing to keep in mind that the legislation enforces is that all of your powers and duties and functions, they're exercised by council by bylaw or resolution at a council meeting. And it's a very collective decision-making model. It requires a form of collaboration and cooperation among your peers to get things done. You see this quite often, first off, on the campaign trail, that different people are standing up there, putting themselves up for office and saying, well, this is my vision for the municipality, or if you vote for me, this is what I'll do. But when they get to council, they need to convince a majority of their colleagues that what you were promising or saying is actually something that they agree with, because as an individual, you can't change policy direction. You can't enact a new bylaw on your own. You need that cooperation with the majority of your fellow council members, and that's that sort of collective decision-making and collective collaboration model that the legislation imposes upon councils. And so you have some sort of formal responsibilities. This is a very big picture. And when I say city, you can read that, of course, to be village or district or town. To consider the well-being and interests of the municipality, contribute to the development and evaluation of policies and programs respecting services and other activities, and participate in council meetings and council committee meetings. One of the few things you are required to do is attend council meetings. And if you don't attend a significant number of them in a row, you can lose your seat. So there is there's not a lot of requirements. One of the requirements is you do need to go to council meetings and committee meetings. So it sort of raises the question as to what's a meeting. So a meeting has to be a material part of the decision-making process. So if you're here with all or majority of your council today, you're not at a meeting, even though you're all collectively here. This is a training session. It's not a material part of the decision-making process. Quorum needs to be present. The example there is if you have a council of nine, at least five must be present. So if you have a council of seven or five, you need a quorum, which is majority plus one, for the meeting to occur. You have to provide public notice of the meeting. That will have been done for all of your regular meetings that have been scheduled for 2015. That would have been done late last year, and there'd be a schedule posted of all of your meetings for 2015. It doesn't mean you can't have other meetings. There's a process where you can call other meetings that aren't ones that you've already scheduled for the year. All your meetings are open to the public, unless there's a specific reason to close them. And so that's important, that what's a meeting, and we'll get into things like shirt sleeve sessions and things like that in a little bit. But you're also doing your business in a public and open forum. There are ways to close the meeting to the public or in camera. Those are covered in the community charter. Oops, sorry, I'm jumping ahead of myself there. Oh, yeah, and it's a good idea to have at least one staff member present when you're having a meeting. You are required to keep minutes of meetings and things like that. So open and closed meetings. You can close a meeting to the public. You have to do it for a specific reason. There are 15 discretionary reasons listed in the community charter. And the topic that you're discussing has to fall under one of those before you can close the meeting. Usually what will have happened is when the agenda is put together by staff, they've done that initial consideration and think this should be on a closed agenda versus an open agenda. However, you're free to ask questions about that or challenge that. And I know that in Kelowna, sometimes the councillor may say, oh, why is this on a closed agenda? Or, you know, or why is this on an open agenda? Would be the opposite as well. And then there is some discretion, and you can actually have a debate and discussion on whether an item should be open or closed, and that is closed, before proceeding if you've got questions as to why a particular item's on a closed agenda or isn't on a closed agenda. And then there's also some subjects that you are required to close the meeting whether you wish to or not. They're very narrow. They might be confidential information from the province. Sometimes you're given a heads up that the province, Ministry X, will be making an announcement in your community next week, but you're getting a heads up ahead of time, for example. There's not very many reasons that you're required to go in camera, but there are a couple there as well. And those are covered in the sections 90 and 90 sub 1 and 90 sub 2 of the charter. So the most common reasons to go in camera are the sort of the three L's, and I'm sure you've heard this before about land, labor, and legal. And certainly the majority of the closed items that I see on agendas would fall under those three, but there are a couple of other that can come up depending upon the circumstances. And then, as I said, one of the ones that's required, the example at the bottom there is negotiations with the province. Any questions before we keep going? Okay. So we're talking now a bit about, meeting procedures. And I'll start off with some sort of big picture, and then we'll sort of drill down a little bit as we get closer. Your regular council meetings, I'm sure you've had a few by now, for either in December or earlier this month. You know they could be during the day, they may be during the evening. Usually there's a provision for a closed portion of the meeting. You may have a more informal, especially now with new councils. I know we're having a lot of sessions, policy sessions, and you might hear them called workshops or shirt sleeve sessions, but they're still meeting. So if you go back to that earlier definition, is this a material part of the decision-making process, not are you making a decision at that particular meeting? And you want to make sure that you're not gathering as a meeting and not properly calling it a meeting. And that's where you might get into some trouble, and that's what you want to avoid. And so there are ways to provide policy updates, to provide updates on initiatives. My earlier comment about council being a continuing body, there's a lot of information, especially for first-time councillors, that the other council dealt with or returning council members are more familiar with, and depending on how many new councillors there are, there's updates to initiatives that you've inherited as now being elected that you need background on. Those are still usually meetings because you're going to use that information to make decisions. So it's a part of that continuum of making a decision. So those types of sessions that you have collectively with staff should be properly constituted as meetings, and then the open and close rules apply depending upon the subject matter. Public council meetings may also include an opportunity for the public to speak directly to council at meetings. And this is something that varies quite widely across the province, where some councils have that built in as part of the agenda, where members of the public can appear before council either as a delegation or as or just to speak as individuals. Sometimes it's restricted to items that are on the agenda. Sometimes it's at the beginning of the meeting, sometimes at the end of the meeting. Sometimes it's on any topic that the person wants to talk about. I have a few thoughts on that we'll talk about a little later on, but that's another part that could be at can be at a council meeting that you might encounter. Yeah? If you're when you're if there's a quorum present, which is a majority of council, and your meeting and what your the subject or the topic, the reason for your meeting, is part of the decision-making process, then you're starting to look at, well, what constitutes a meeting? Well, you've got quorum, you've got an agenda, what's the topic? So if you're, for example, say you're cooperating with a tourism group to build a facility, and that started with the previous council, you need to know what's going on with it now. That might be an update, but there's still going to be decisions made as to whether this gets constructed or not. This part of the decision-making process. So does that mean having a conversation with your colleague? You've not met quorum, but if you're meeting collectively, it's very easy to be now having a meeting. And if you're having a meeting, the requirements under the legislation are you have to tell the public you're having the meeting and all those types of things that come in. Minutes need to be kept of meetings. So it's always fact-specific, but it's easy to, especially when you're giving briefings. In Kelowna, we sort of drew the line that orientation sessions we put on for the new council weren't a meeting because it was similar to this. It was training. However, if it was a decision, so we had an orientation session on similar things to this, how meetings work, how to conduct yourself at a council meeting. But then when we had a discussion on committees of council needs to make a decision. So that becomes a meeting because the information we're giving them is much more specific than just general, how does the council work? What committees do you want this term? Do you want to change the terms of reference for any of those committees? These are some of the challenges we have with some of the and positives we've had with some of the committees that were in place the previous term. That now is part of that decision-making continuum because they're going to use that information to make decisions. So that is at a meeting. That's sort of my sort of best professional advice, that you can get into trouble by getting together on certain subject matters that you, it's easy to call, and that's why you have these different names for them, shirt sleeves or policy updates. But if they're actually part of that decision-making continuum, you have to be very careful that you're not actually at a meeting. And that doesn't mean it's a public meeting. You can have these and appropriately close them, but you have to put on the different trappings of a meeting. And those should be some of the conversations you're having with your CAO, with your corporate officer. Each of you will have a slightly different tradition of how you've interpreted these historically. But that's, if you look at the legislation, look at some of the case law, it can be very easy and for councils to inadvertently drift into get from a gathering to a meeting without realizing it, without having put those legal trappings on your meeting, and you want to avoid that at the end of the day. Did that help answer your question? Okay. So an example of just a regular council meeting, you might have, as I said, public attending or delegation. They could be at the beginning. As I said, they may be at the end. You might get reports from committees of council. You might separate the development application reports, which would be things like rezonings, official community plan, amendments, development permits. Then the other types of reports that council might be considering. If there's any draft resolutions, like bylaws get read. And then, again, sometimes this, you see that last bullet can sometimes be at the beginning of a meeting, an opportunity for each member of council to give a little update on what they've been doing in the community since the last time council met. And that's sort of just like a general, you'll have a procedure bylaw that sets out specifically the order of your meetings. And that doesn't mean you can't change that order, but that's where it sets out from. And so if you don't like the order of the way your meetings are structured, there's ways to change it. You just need to change the procedure bylaw. Then a specific beast are public hearings. They may be held during the day. They may be held in the evening. You may have a public hearing, and then that's it. Some municipalities will then have a meeting right after the public hearing where they consider the bylaws that were at the public hearing. And the length can vary. Public hearing may be over quite quickly. It may go on for several hours. Occasionally you hear stories where a public hearing lasts, it's held over a couple of days, depending upon how controversial the land use change is that's under the consideration at the public hearing. And a public hearing is a little different type of creature in that has a specific purpose is to consider changes to your zoning bylaw or your official community plan bylaw. Anyone who believes they have an interest in property is allowed to speak. You may have a timer. Some places don't, some places do. But if you're going to restrict speakers to a certain time, you need to have that in the procedure bylaw. At Kelowna, people have 5 minutes to speak at a public hearing, and we do have a timer. We found that it works very well and that people know that, and they practice and prepare their presentation for that 5 minutes. Before we got the timer and made that change, people would get up to the mic and, you know, what they say much more concisely in 5 minutes, they might say in 15. And so it's a very, it's a, as long as it's a, you don't say you have 2 minutes or something, as long as the time is reasonable, it's a very effective way to also ensure fairness that one person isn't at the mic for 45 minutes or an hour and a half, or I've seen that happen in other jurisdictions, that everyone has a chance to speak, because that's really the purpose of the public hearing, is to hear from the public. And one of the ways you treat everybody the same, if there's a fairness. And certainly it's well known in Kelowna that if you're speaking, you have 5 minutes, then you sit down. And if you have something more to say after everyone else in the room has spoken, you can come up and not, as long as you're not repeating yourself, you can speak for a second 5 minutes. And that that really works well. And certainly we've had some public hearings that go on for 6 or 7 hours, and you really see the value of having that, as does the public, because they're not sitting there listening to one person speak to council for an hour. Now, the other interesting thing, as I said, at a public hearing, the purpose is to hear from the public. And you'll hear things you don't like, and you'll hear things you don't agree with. But you're not debating people or your colleagues at a public hearing. You're there to hear from the public. You can certainly ask questions of an intervener, whether it's the applicant or staff or a member of the public, but the purpose of the public hearing isn't necessarily to be disagreeing with them or debating them. That comes at the council meeting stage. The other important thing to remember about a public hearing is once it's closed, you can't hear any more information. So this can be tricky because sometimes people will have left the public hearing and then want to write in afterwards the next day or the next couple of days, or you can't get new information after the public hearing's closed, and that's to ensure procedural fairness, that everyone has access to the same information at the same time. So an example of, as I think I've spoken to most of this, about how a public hearing may run, you might get the staff presentation on this is the application. You'll have already heard that already once because you have had to have advanced the bylaw, given it at least one reading to get as far as a public hearing. You might have given it first and second. So you've already have a familiarity with the application. Then there's usually some form of acknowledgement of who's written in to council saying they're either in favor or opposed. That might be just distributed. It might be formally read out, but there's usually some way to acknowledge that. The applicant gets a chance to speak, and council may ask him or her questions. The public get up to speak. They may ask him or her questions. And as I said, council can be asking questions the whole time, but not crossing the line into debating. Another thing to keep in mind is that for some people, they come to one or two public hearings ever, and it's one of their only direct interactions with council. And so although over time you'll have these become, oh, I know what to expect at a public hearing, for a lot of the public, although you will have your regulars at public hearings, it'll be the first time because it's something impacting them in that neighborhood. And they feel quite passionate about it, and this is their first interaction, perhaps, with council in your chambers. And so always try to keep in mind that from their what are they seeing from their perspective? And are they walking away thinking, okay, that was a good interaction and exchange, whether or not they agreed with whatever the decision ended up being. Yeah? Certainly we have that in Kelowna, and that the applicant can get up and respond to questions raised by the public. Not give a new presentation, but they can say, oh, when the intervener asked about, you know, parking, this was addressed in the parking, you know, this is addressed by the bylaw or whatever the question is. So that can be, again, how is your procedure bylaw set up? Certainly in Kelowna, the applicant can respond to questions raised by interveners. But it becomes a fine line. If they launch into new information that they didn't present the first time around, you don't want to have this never-ending circle of, oh, well, now the public can get to speak to information the intervener presented new that they didn't talk about the other time. So there's a fine line as to how much the applicant can speak that second time. because you don't want this to be a never-ending public hearing. Then for general proceedings of council, regardless of the type of meeting, it's the mayor will preside, and you'll have some provision where there's a deputy mayor, and that may vary by month, it may vary by a quarter of the year, however you divide that up. I've seen different examples of how you rotate the deputy mayor position. But if the mayor's present, the mayor presides. If the mayor's not present, then someone else has to take over and run the meeting. The mayor determines who speaks, including staff, and in what order. And you may have a system where you're just raising your hands and the mayor's writing things down. You may have in your chambers some kind of electronic system where you press buttons and then a list of speakers comes up. The mayor still determines who speaks and in what order. A resolution has to be moved and seconded before it can be discussed or voted on. And so sometimes you'll see a member of council wanting to move something. The mayor might not accept that yet. They want to hear from other councillors. Or sometimes a councillor will move something, but there's no seconder. So that's where it ends. If the mayor asks for a seconder for that resolution and there isn't one, then that sort of the discussion ends for lack of a seconder. And then when everyone's had a chance to give their thoughts or their input on whatever the motion is on the floor, and you might hear call the question, that means it's time to vote. Yeah? Usually that's the mayor, but sometimes you might hear a councillor say, hey, we're going around in circles on this, let's call the question. But it's actually the mayor is the one that does that. And again, it depends upon how formal or informal your council practices are. You want to find that balance between having procedure so it's not complete anarchy, but not so in Roger's Rules of Order or whoever's you're using that it's ridiculous to, you know, people are being rules lawyers types of things. So you need to find a balance of what works for your council and your community that you're getting things done. But so usually there's just a discussion, but the mayor would say, okay, it's time to vote. But you want to make sure everyone's had an opportunity to speak before that and not use it to cut off people who you don't want to hear from. So you're assumed to have voted in favor of whatever you're voting on, unless you physically make the effort to raise your hand saying you're opposed. So if the mayor calls the question and you just sit there, you're assumed to have voted in favor. Whether you've spoken or not, you have to physically raise your hand and make that effort to vote against, to be recorded as against. You cannot abstain. So there's no ability to abstain from a vote. If you're there, you're voting. And the reason you wouldn't be there would be if you've declared a conflict for any reason under the charter. Obviously, if you're absent from the meeting, then you're absent from the meeting. But you can't abstain from voting. That's not possible. That's not an option that the province gives. The other thing that I get asked a fair bit by the public in particular is, it was a tie vote, so the mayor had to break it. And that's not the case. Sometimes it might appear that way if it's a split vote, if you have, you know, seven members on your council and it's 4-3, because the mayor is saying, okay, those in favor, those opposed. And depending how the mayor does that, the mayor might say, I'm in favor, I'm opposed. It might look like they're breaking the tie, but all the councillors should be, and because council is mayor and councillors, remember, so when it's time to vote, everyone votes at the same time. But the mayor doesn't break a tie. If for some reason you're down a member and there is a tie vote, it's a defeat. So if you were missing, example again of seven members of council, one was away that day or one was a conflict and you only had six people considering the item, a 3-3 vote is a defeat. And so those are little things that your corporate officer is aware of and will keep in mind if things like that are happening. But, I get a lot from the public and from the media saying, oh, the mayor had to actually vote and break a tie. Well, the mayor votes every time like every other member of council. I mentioned earlier about you kind of resolutions or bylaws. So resolutions can be moved, discussed, voted on at open or closed meetings. The legislation prohibits you from giving a bylaw any readings in a closed meeting. You have to give bylaws reading at an open meeting. That doesn't mean that there might be some background, in particular if you're need some legal advice on a bylaw before you give it readings. That part could be held at a closed meeting, that legal advice portion on the bylaw, and it's appropriately that it would be given at the public meeting, at the closed meeting, but you then can't go give the bylaw any readings while you're at that closed meeting. That has to be done at an open meeting. And bylaws require at the minimum two meetings to adopt, and so you might give first, second, and third readings to your business license bylaw, and then you have to wait until you can adopt it at a subsequent meeting. The province has this. There's a collective decision making, and there's time for sort of sober second thought. And just because you've given a bylaw first or second or third reading, there's no requirement to keep giving it positive readings further on. And certainly as a new council, you will, as I was mentioning earlier, you'll inherit bylaws that have been given readings by the previous council. You're not, just because they gave it first reading or first, second, and third reading, you're not required to adopt it just because the previous council advanced it as far they advanced it. So although it's a continuing body and you inherit those decisions, you're not required to agree with those decisions. And at the opportunity presents itself, you are, sometimes you'll hear, oh, well, the previous bylaw is at third reading from the previous council, so new council, you must adopt it. Well, that's not legally accurate. You're not required to adopt it just because the previous council had advanced it. And if there's reasons that you that are good reasons not to adopt it, then you don't adopt it. Sure. You should rescind them. Every so often, we'll go through and clean up ones because sometimes bylaws aren't proceeded with for a variety of reasons. It might be if the applicant abandons it because they can't meet conditions for adoption, say if it's at third reading for a rezoning. You may have a bylaw the previous council may have, give you an example from Kelowna, there was a motorcycle noise, and could we adopt a bylaw or amend the traffic bylaw to somehow regulate motorcycle noise with decibel readings? Well, this was a very passionate and very controversial item. And so one council had got the bylaw as far as third reading, but it has never been adopted. And now that's two councils ago. So, I would rather we clean it up and either bring it back and they defeat it, or what we'll do is once a year we might come forward with a report with all the bylaws that are sort of out there that we know aren't progressing, and then ask council to close them all, and then we have a little explanation as to each one as to why we're recommending that. But you don't want bylaws from years ago still sitting open. It's a good practice to just close them up once in a while. Okay. So there's certain bylaws that aren't as easy as to give three readings at one meeting and then adopt at the next. Like an OCP bylaw, for example, it requires a majority of council, not a majority of those present. So, for example, if you have an OCP bylaw and you have a council of nine, like Kelowna does, but only six were present, a 4-2 vote in favor would actually not be enough to advance the official community plan bylaw, because that's not a majority of council, which is 5 in Kelowna's case. And so you have to be aware of those sometimes little quirks that the province has imposed. And it'll depend on your quorum, but most bylaws are a simple majority of those present. There's a couple that require a majority of council, regardless of the number present that day. And that number will be your quorum number, which is 5+1. The other thing is, some bylaws require some kind of approval process before you can adopt them. So the business license bylaw, you have to provide an input for those businesses impacted by your business license bylaw to make their concerns or support known to council prior to adoption. Your DCC bylaw has to go to the ministry before you can adopt it. There's a borrowing bylaws are a complicated process for long-term borrowing, and there's a, if you miss a procedural step, you might not be able to borrow the money. And those are things that your corporate officer knows, but there's a little quirks that when you're building into a timeline, you need to know these things and keep them in mind, that if you want to borrow money, it may take 4 to 6 months or for it to go through the process, because there's different places on the line where you might give the bylaw readings and it goes to the province. Then you start your AAP process, or assuming you're not going directly to the electors, then you have that process, then you have a quashing period. So you have to build all this into your timeline, and if you need to borrow the money, it's not as easy as, oh, I can go borrow it next month. And if you miss any of those steps, then the province might not give you your certificate, or the MFA may not borrow the money on your behalf if some of these steps have been missed. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry about that. So an AAP is an alternative approval process, and if you're long-term borrowing, you require the consent of the electors, and then there's two ways to get that. You can either get it at an actual referendum-type question, where if it's not held in conjunction with the election, it's like holding a by-election or an election where people come, mark a ballot. Are you in favor of the municipality borrowing $48 million to build a new RCMP building, yes or no? And then that's whatever the outcome is, depending on the size of your municipality, it can be expensive to do that exercise, because it costs the same as what it would cost to do a by-election. The AAP, or alternative approval process, is a way where it's a petition against process, where the municipality says, okay, we're going to borrow this amount of money unless over the next 30 days 10% of the electors sign what's called an elector response form saying they don't want to do this. So Lake Country is going through that right now to borrow money for acquisition of lands as part of a CN purchase of abandoned rail line. So depending on how many voters you have in your municipality, that number will change. A city like Kelowna with... For an alternative approval process to work, you'd have to get almost 90,000 people to sign a petition, whereas Harrison Hot Spring is going to be a lot less. In 30 days, you can. There certainly have been times when AAPs have been successful in that. More than 10% of the population is signed, and then the money can't be borrowed because you don't have the assent of the electors. So that's what an AAP is. Sorry about that. Okay, I have some comments on public input. Public input at open or closed meetings is restricted or regulated by legislation and your procedure bylaw. someone other than staff or council can obviously attend an in-camera or closed meeting, but they're usually just for that specific purpose. They're not there for the whole time. Media doesn't attend the closed meetings, obviously, but you can obviously have guests and third parties in a closed meeting as long as it's meeting that requirement to be closed. Public input at public hearings and for development applications, like, say, a development variance permit or something like that, is governed by rules of procedural fairness, Local Government Act, and your procedure bylaw. And as I said before, the public can attend any meeting, but that doesn't mean they get to participate in any meeting. And so attending and participating are two different things. And hopefully your public's not shouting at you from the gallery or something like that. And as I had mentioned before, the ability to directly address council during your council meeting varies quite widely across the province. And just have a few words to say on that, and that there's some advantages and challenges of having a process where members of the public come and speak directly to you at a council meeting. It certainly is an example of open and transparency, where you're sitting as council and your constituents have an ability to come and voice their comments or concerns to you. So that's the positive side. The challenge can be it's next to impossible to control what is said or requested. And where this can be an issue is I've seen that quite often there's an expectation that if someone gets to address council directly that you're now going to do something about whatever their issue is. The challenge becomes, what if their issue isn't something you have a jurisdiction over? Right now, we have a number of people asking, can they come speak to council about Fortis's plan to implement smart meters in the Okanagan? Well, that's something council has no control over. So they're very passionate people. They're the constituents. But is it appropriate to address council directly at a council meeting when what can council do about it? Council doesn't have any authority to say, don't do it, which is what the request is. So are you setting up a false expectation and then problems for yourselves by enabling sort of anyone to come to a council meeting and speaking? So that's the other side of it. And the answer to that question will vary and is up to each of your respective councils to figure out where you want to be in that. The other challenge is you rarely will get the complete story. And usually, I know when I was working and had bylaw enforcement reporting to me, I quickly found out there were always three versions of whatever happened. There was what the person who had the interaction with the bylaw officer told me, there was what the bylaw officer told me, and then there was what happened. And usually there was a continuity between all three, but sometimes there were three different stories. And so when you're presented with only one version of an event with an individual or a very passionate delegation in front of you, you might not know, well, what's our policy on this? Or, you know, have they accurately reflected their interactions with staff? Or so you can be put in an awkward public place where you feel compelled to make a decision that might not be, in hindsight, the best decision. Because what a lot of the process is put into place is to try to minimize arbitrary decision making, because those are usually the decisions that 6 weeks or 6 months later you think, we didn't know everything we know now, and perhaps that wasn't the best decision that we made. It made sense at the time with a room full of angry people, but it's created 10 times the problem now because we didn't have all the information when we made that decision. And so those are the types of things you need to weigh as to do you want to have staff, do you want to have the public available and speaking to you directly at council meetings on any topic that they choose to. Then a few concluding comments I have on sort of the interaction with staff. And this, I know, this will vary greatly by jurisdiction. Certainly, you know, what we try to sort of say in Kelowna is you know, especially in a smaller place, you know the elected officials as staff and maybe very different capacities before you became elected officials. At the same time, after you're elected, someone that you might have referred to by their first name prior to the election, they're now an elected official, you're now staff. And you're all working together for the same goal, but you're also playing different roles. And so to reinforce that you should always be referring to the mayor as mayor, whatever their name is, in Kelowna's case, Mayor Bazarin, or your worship, the councillors as councillor, whatever your last name is. And during council meetings, staff are instructed you're addressing the mayor. The question may come from Councillor so-and-so, but really it's council collectively asking through the mayor questions to staff. Staff are responding to the mayor. And there are some lines that need to be maintained to make sure everyone plays the role that you're assigned. We're not elected officials, you're not staff, and vice versa. You are elected officials, we are staff, and things work best when everyone remembers that. My concluding thought is the degree of formality will vary greatly within the province, how you interact with your staff at council meetings. The analogy I like to say is based on my sort of previous comments, where when everyone plays their role, you have a great production. Great decisions get made. When there's role confusion or people start playing roles and it gets a little too informal, then it can sort of veer into either a comedy or a tragedy, depending on your perspective. And you want to avoid that. But what's important is to find a style that suits your community and balances, as I was saying before, that you want to have some procedural rules that you need to follow, but you all, at the end of the day, you want to get things done. And there's a balance there of how formal or informal you want to be, but you don't want to be so shackled by process and procedure that you feel you can't do anything, but you don't want to be so loosey-goosey that you're making decisions, you know, outside of council meetings, for example. And finding that balance is slightly different for each municipality, but it's, I think, one of the strengths of our system, in that there's not a my earlier comment that this is more of an art than a science. There's different paths and different ways to get to the same place that we all want to get to. So that concludes my presentation this morning, and I'd be happy to answer any more questions if there are any. I think we have a few minutes left. It's about 20 after 8 or so. Yeah. Yeah, alternative approval process. Then the question was, if you did have a AAP alternative approval process and that was defeated, what are your options? The option for council would be to go to referendum and ask the question again. Peachland did that within the last 12 to 18 months, I believe, and the AAP was defeated, but at referendum, the borrowing bylaw was passed about borrowing money for a new curling facility. Or if you don't wish to do that, then you have to find a different way to fund the whatever you're trying to get the money for, and that might not be an option. And there was a question over here.
You raised the challenge of public delegation. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how you would advise to regulate those kind of criteria around what delegations are appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Should it be a future bylaw? Should it be up to the mayor?
I would say it needs to be in writing, because otherwise then you're not being perceived as acting arbitrarily. Should start in your procedure bylaw, should have some kind of section on delegations. City of Kelowna has a very restrictive one, and we hear that a lot, because people come and they say, well, I'm going to talk to Peachland, I'm talking to Vernon, I'm talking to Lake Country, and why won't you let me come talk to Kelowna? And we say, well, it's not that you can't interact with elected officials, there are different ways to do it. But we have that in the procedure bylaw, and then sort of one of the discussions we have with every new council is how this is how we've interpreted the procedure bylaw to date, and this is why. Are you comfortable with that, council, or do you want us to be more have a more liberal interpretation and let more people come speak to you? And to date, councils have said, no, we're happy with the alternative ways, and so we make sure that there are a lot of other ways easily available that the local politicians are accessible. Email, phone, meeting individually. The mayor might meet with the person. But it starts with the procedure bylaw, what's permitted and not permitted. So the only delegations we have are groups that we might give money to, come and do a presentation about how did they spend the money, whether it's the Boys and Girls Club or something like that, or arts and culture. The sort of safety valve is, if there's an exception, council can say at a meeting, city clerk, place so-and-so on a council agenda. And then we go and do that. So council always has the ability to place anybody on the agenda, but then it's that collective decision. It's not Councillor X thinking so-and-so should come talk to council. He or she has to convince a majority of their colleagues that that's a good idea and appropriate use of council time. And so there's a resolution saying, city clerk, let the Fortis people, the anti-Fortis meter people come to council. That's how they, so there's a way that someone, as an exception, can still get on. But it would start with your procedure bylaw. Again, it's really up to you. I've seen some places that say you can come talk to us about an item on the agenda only before or after we make your decision. One of the things that we'll do is, yes, have you spoken with staff person X? Or have you, or most of the things we get have nothing to do with city business. It's delegations wanting to, because they don't like an initiative of the provincial government or the federal government or changes. One that we're getting now are the changes to the hunting regulations. So we're getting people who are hunters asking to come talk to council because they're upset with the province's changes to the hunting regulations. Well, nothing that the city can do about that. Some local governments like to say, oh, well, I'll write a letter on behalf of the city to the minister saying we agree with you. That's part of that interaction. Some councils want to do that.
So we're going to transition to the next section. There's a question back here. Why don't you come up and ask Stephen? No? Come on up. So people who have some questions, Stephen's going to be here for a little while. But I'd really like to thank him very much on behalf of the LGA and for a very good presentation at 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning. And he's back here to do it for tomorrow for another group. So thanks again, Stephen.
Okay, thanks, Richard.
So as I said, come up and see Stephen, or to do whatever you want to do before whether you need to just take a little break. We're going to start at 8:30 sharp.